Tom Wolfe is this year's Jefferson Lecturer, a high honor bestowed annually by the National Endowment for the Humanities. In his remarks, the acclaimed inventor of the new journalism argues that human beings are not Homo sapiens. His ideas may seem a dramatic departure from those of Charles Darwin or even Mr. Wolfe's literary idol, Emile Zola. As Mr. Wolfe labels us, we are Homo loquax, beings who upset the orderly process of evolution when we gained the power of speech. Tom Wolfe, whose most recent novel is Charlotte Simmons, joins us in our studios, and thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, it's great to be here, Scott.
Just to get this out of the way, everyone's going to ask me when it's over, were you wearing a white suit? And the answer is...
Yes, it's. I have to tell you, though, if you want to wear a white suit and you're out of town, you got to take at least four with you. They're good for 3.5, 4 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Then it's time to rotate.
So you do have more than one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I brought a ton.
Okay. Glad we could get that out of the way. As you state in your remarks, Emile Zola is your literary idol, at any rate. Remind us of what avenues he opened for writers and thinkers.
Zola considered himself the first scientific novelist. He was determined to cover the whole country of France, area by area, and industry by industry, if necessary. I'll give you an example. Germinal, one of his famous books, is about mining for coal in France. A harrowing book. He wrote a book called L'Assommoir, which more or less means the gin mill. It's about the slums of Paris. And then he wrote one called La Terre, which is about farm life. And he was a real reporter. My whole background is in journalism. Mm-hmm. He called it documenting. He didn't call it reporting. He went down in the mines. I love this, actually. To do Germinal, he went down in the mines, posing as the secretary of a member of the French Assembly who was investigating mine conditions. I'll just add this just to show you what I mean. When he was down there, 150 feet down the earth, he saw this huge dray horse, which is pulling a sled full of coal. So he says to one of the miners, he said, "How on earth do you get those horses in and out of here every day?" And they started laughing. And he said, "Well, what's so funny?" And they said, "Mr. Zola, don't you understand? These horses come down here once when they're foals. They've just been born." He said, "They grow up down here. They work down here all of their lives. And when they drop dead, they're buried down here." Well, that symbol is one of the greatest in all of French literature because it stands for the miners, who in effect do the same thing at that period in history. And that blending of reporting and the imagination of the novel just swept me away. When I finally started writing novels, I was 54 years old, and I wrote a book called The Bonfire of the Vanities. I started to write it off the top of my head. It's about New York, and I'd lived there a long time. And then I discovered that I was helpless without reporting. So I went out, I reported on all sorts of areas of New York life, from the Bronx, the slums of the Bronx, to an investment banking firm on Wall Street, and projected myself into the hides, if you will, into the central nervous systems of other people. That was what Zola was so brilliant at.
But his phrase was the human beast.
Yes, he wrote Zola wrote a novel called The Human Beast, La Bête Humaine, in 1888. It's about four murderers, including one who has a compulsion, what the tabloids call a perv urge, to make love to women and then kill them. And this was his, you know, he was so influenced by the theories of Charles Darwin, who in effect in 1859, he wrote The Origin of Species. He said, why are we humans kidding ourselves? We weren't made by God in his image. We're all animals.
Well, you have a startling phrase where you say evolution has been irrelevant for 11,000 years.
Yes. Yeah, I feel that it's been irrelevant for at least 11,000. The reason I pick 11,000, I'll tell you, I'm arguing that as soon as the human beast acquired speech, it was like a nuclear weapon. It utterly changed life on Earth. It was speech and only speech that enables human beings to reason, that enables them to have memory of any complexity at all. Try to remember something complicated without using words in your head. I can't do it. I don't think anybody can.
Well, you suggest even a couple of examples you give. Farming?
Farming, you know, we think of it as so natural. Farming is a great artifice. You simply cannot farm without speech. For example, if you can't tell your son, look, this here's seeds. Now you take these seeds and you got to put them in the ground over there where I tell you. Put them in a straight line. And if you don't do that, you're not going to have any ears of corn this summer. Well, you know, you just can't farm without being able to tell somebody what to do. It's a prime example of why I feel that the humans should not be called Homo sapiens, which means a man reasoning or rational man, but Homo loquax, man talking. In fact, loquax can also mean talkative or garrulous. They all apply.
Conjecture the idea that religion can trace itself back to the power of speech.
Yeah. As I am saying that as soon as humans acquired speech, one of the first questions undoubtedly was why, meaning why am I here? How did I get here? And what is this agonizing struggle called life all about? Mm-hmm. And for so long in human history, it has been explained by religion, by a belief in God, by a belief that he sets, this almighty force sets the standards. But the human beast doesn't even require hope. He needs to be convinced. And that's why Charles Darwin is one of the greatest figures in human history. It's got nothing to do with his theory. It's due to the fact that the theory changed history. It is the one thing that more than anything else put an end to religion among most educated people in Europe and the United States. Darwinism offers no hope at all. Christianity, for example, Jesus offered a lot of hope. The meek shall inherit the earth. The last shall be first. It's a great, great message. John Calvin, the leading Protestant, I guess, offered a little less hope. Muhammad offered more and less hope. Marx offered enormous hope, much influenced by Jesus, although I don't think he ever realized it, because he said, the meek shall inherit the earth now.
Yeah, right.
Freud offered the world more sex. And the world seemed to be happy to get it. In fact, at this moment, as we're in this studio, around the world, there are, I dare say, millions, at this instant, of loin spasms and hip convulsions going on that would not be going on if Sigmund Freud had never lived, if Sigmund Freud in speech had never had the effect that he ended up having.
Well, but of course Darwin would say, would suggest that sort of thing would go on without Freud. We just wouldn't be as guilt-ridden about it.
That's true. No, you're right. That's exactly what...
Or as thoughtful or as considerate or as...
And see, Darwin doesn't offer any hope whatsoever. He just, you know, you're a beast. Deal with it.
We wanted to get you to read it, because you're Tom Wolfe, we wanted to get you to read a section of your remarks.
Well, I'd be delighted to. I hope I don't stumble over the words.
If we could begin here from book one, two, Their Words Alone, if that's all right with you.
Okay. Here we are. Yes. Chapter one, first verse of the book of John in the New Testament says rather cryptically, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. This has baffled biblical scholars, but I interpret it as follows. Until there was speech, the human beast could have no religion, and consequently no God. In the beginning was the Word. Speech gave the beast its first ability to ask questions, and undoubtedly one of the first expressed by his sudden but insatiable anxiety as to how he got here and to what this agonizing struggle called life is all about. To this day, the beast, the human beast, needs, cannot live without, some explanation as the basis of whatever status he thinks he may possess. For this reason, extraordinary individuals have been able to change history with their words alone.
Mr. Wolfe, thank you very much.
Well, you're more than welcome. Thanks so much, Scott.
The 2006 Jefferson Lecture for the National Endowment for the Humanities, Tom Wolfe. To hear more of his thoughts on the human beast and read the full text of his Jefferson Lecture, you can come to our website, npr.org.